Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Indie Authors Roundtable. I'm your host, R.L. Jackson, author of the Crashing series, the On the Set and Departed Soul series coming soon. I'm also the editor-in-chief of Indie Authors Monthly Magazine and the host of Navigating Indie World Radio Show. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Carol P. Roman, author of over 51 books and host of Navigating Indie World blog show, and let's say hello to our neighbors. I'm also creative director of Indie Authors Monthly Magazine.
Hi, I'm Anita Dickinson, author of the FBI Tracker Crime series, host of the On the Hunt podcast, and fiction editor, columnist, and sometime book reviewer for Indie Authors Monthly Magazine.
Well, today we're going to just have a general talk. We're going to kick it off with talking about audiobooks, the process of those, and then discuss book to TV and movie adaptations. So we will go back to our regular scheduled program with an author to interview on our next show. But for this roundtable, it's just going to be us ladies. So audiobooks, Anita, what do you think? Have you listened to them? Are you interested in them for your book? And then, of course, I'll share, you know, my experience as well.
Am I there? I got cut off.
We hear you. Yeah, we hear you.
Okay, good. I wasn't for sure if I got back in or not. God, you got to love technology when it works. When it doesn't, you say, you know what? But to answer your question, no, this is something that I am really looking forward to today, is this discussion on Audible, because it's not something that I have I've thought about it with my books, but I've never really explored, you know, what the opportunities are that are out there. And but from listening some of the things that Carol has said, some of the things that you said, I think that it does present a very good opportunity. And I'd like to hear more about, you know, what the two of you think about it and see what I can do as far as getting my book set up by going Audible.
Well, you know, Audible is, you know, for people who don't know, Audible is like they used to have books on tape. People used to buy the book on a tape and listen to it. They'd put in a tape recorder, and then it was books on CD. And now you can just download a book, I guess, through Audible, or, you know, there's iTunes. There's a bunch of different ways to download, you know, a book and listen to it. And they have some books are narrated by really famous actors and actresses, or even the author themselves. When my son wrote his books, you know, Michael Philip Cash, when he wrote under the name Michael Philip Cash, he wanted his uncle to hear the books. My brother is legally blind. So he had, just about the time that Michael started producing books, he stopped being able to read. And he used to read books that were large print. And then slowly he had to give it up. And we wanted him really to hear the books. So Michael found Audible, and he hired an actor to do his first book, Brood 10. And we didn't know much about it. And there's two ways to do with Audible. You can either partner up with the actor, where you split the royalties, and or you can pay. You can come to an agreed-upon price, and you pay the actor outright, and you own it. And this way, if you don't own it, if you're splitting it, which RL's going to tell us a little bit about that. I'm going to let RL talk about that part in a minute. But what had happened to us was we didn't know. We told him how long the book was. It took him about 3 weeks longer than he promised to deliver. And when he finished, he came and hit us up for more money. He said that, you know, it took him longer than he expected, even though he knew. So, like, clearly we were rookies at doing it. With the second book, Stillwell, A Haunting on Long Island, we took our time, really found an actor that we liked, Dan McGowan, and we really locked down a price before we gave it to him. We locked down the time and the price, and he delivered, exactly as he said he would. And then we had to listen to it and find words that maybe he mispronounced, or find words that we didn't like the way he was saying it, or words that he might have missed. Oddly enough, we found a few errors in the book, and we were able to fix the paperbacks. And then he would fix it, and we released those. And what I have to say, and I always tell everybody, Audible, you do very well. Sometimes we make more with Audible than we do with the royalties on all of our other books put together. The Audible royalties are fantastic, and I strongly suggest that you do Audible. Of course, with my children's books, you can't do them. I asked Dan to do an Audible collection of all 10 of my Captain No-Beards, and I'm waiting to let it go live. There's some sort of an issue with the sound or whatever. But, RL, you want to talk about your experience with Audible?
Yeah, myself, like I'm sure some other authors who were interested in Audible, I got into it, by your suggestion, to give it a try, because, that's another revenue stream. But I didn't have the upfront money to have it produced by someone. Because I think there's two ways. Like you said, you can do the royalty share, or you could pay someone to do it, and then you get to keep and control and use that. Well, I couldn't do the second option, so I did a royalty share. The great thing with that was not having to come up with that upfront money. You get auditions in and you listen to, the sample that you upload, and you can make your decision from there if you're going to have that person read your book. So for me, I did that. I had someone audition. I liked her. She was, good, and she delivered the sample, pretty well. We went ahead. It took a while for her to get the files right. It took a little longer for me as well to get it up. But once we did, the sales were decent. Like, I would make more with that than with regular book sales. But once the reviews started to come in, some people did not like her narration. And they reflected those in the reviews of the book, of the audiobook anyway. And, of course, those sales started to dry up to the point where they're basically non-existent now. And it's not like you have the option to just snatch it down. Because mm-hmm. you're in a 50-50 sort of, relationship with the person who produced it, I have to contact the narrator, get her okay to, as a collective, go to ACX and request that they take it down, because we're locked in for 7 years, and it's only been a year. So
right.
for another 6 years of zero sales, for another, potential avenue for sales, just doesn't sit well with me, and I don't want the narrator to suffer either, because if people see that she's getting bad reviews for my narration, it might dissuade another author from using her for future work. So there's serious pros and cons when you take the royalty share route.
Because I was going through Michael's reviews, and there were some, positive reviews for Dan, and then there were some negative reviews for Dan. But either way, it was mixed. And you're not going to please everybody, but when you're starting out with a couple negatives, people will just skip it and not even bother. People who are like into Audible, they go to those Audible reviews, so they're pretty important. But a good narrator really brings the book to life. I mean, my brother, who was an avid reader and hated giving up the reading, now wouldn't give up the narration. He looks for these books that are 10 and 12 hours long. I think, Anita, you saw that one of the books was like 4 hours. I think it was Monsterland was like four, right? Is
yeah,
that what it
four
said?
Hours and something.
4 hours. And, he'll look for books that are deliberately 10 or 12 or 15 hours because he so enjoys that it's very intimate. I mean, years ago, that's how people read books. You had one person in the middle of the room would read the book to all the people. And quite honestly, I read every night with my grandson. We read together, and it's really different than you could read a book, and it's a very personal experience. But when you hear a book, you just kind of let go. And it plays like a movie in your head. And that, you know, when Michael was picked up by a publisher, we had to turn off Monsterland narrated by Dan, because the publisher was re-releasing it, and he had his own. He picked Scott Brick, who's like apparently a superstar in narrators, to narrate it. So because we owned it, we were able to just shut it off, and it came back up with Scott Brick being the narrator. You know, of course, it's a newer version. You know, the editor at WordPress changed quite a bit of the book before they republished it. But, you know, it's just really interesting. It's a whole new dimension to listen to your book being read to you.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, because when I heard my sample, you know, come back, and, you know, when they're done with it, you have to go through and listen and basically for each chapter make sure that, you know, it sounds good. I honestly didn't go through the entire thing, but the chapters that I did listen to, it was kind of surreal. It was also, to be honest, like to hear somebody else put their emotion and inflection behind my words was hard for me, because it's not the emotion that I was, say, thinking when I wrote that. So, it's all subjective, but it is a way different experience than just sitting down and reading. And I definitely think it's something that authors should try at least once, whether it's royalty share or not. Give it a shot and see what the experience is.
It's interesting, RL, that you bring that up, because I have to tell you, one of the promotional things we've done the last few weeks is I've had Michael reading excerpts from all of his novels. And I've had Brittany, who's my assistant, put them on Facebook with just a snippet of dialogue. And it's very interesting if you listen to Dan read the same snippet, and then you listen to Michael, who actually wrote it, his version,
mm-hmm.
It's very different. It's mm-hmm. It's really, because it's interpretative, and you know, Dan is reading it as a person who's not intimately involved, and Michael, perhaps like he's acting something out in his own head. So it's very interesting, the two
mm-hmm.
ways. And I never even thought of using the Audible snippets. I just wanted Michael to be reading his own books on Facebook. I wanted people to be able to hear him read his own words. I've been reading my own stuff also, and that's a nice marketing tool, by the way, guys. I've noticed sales have gone up. RL,
mm-hmm.
You might want to think about doing it. You just read into your phone,
yeah.
Or you have somebody film you. I don't know if you've seen my posts on Facebook lately, but sales
mm-hmm.
definitely picked up, and I'm getting a lot of shares. Anita, you might want to do that. Read like a paragraph or so from each book and just put it up on Facebook.
Well, now, okay.
Yeah, I've been wanting
to
do that.
Yeah. Remember, I'm not on Facebook, but let me ask you this. When you're doing these snippets, and I think, yeah, that I really like that idea. Are you doing it as a video or just audio?
Michael did his as audio because
okay.
He's shyer than me, although if you meet him, you wouldn't know it. And and I've done mine simply with a cell phone, you know, only because I published a book with a publisher, and they've asked me to do 3 Facebook posts a week. And I have to tell you, there must be something scientific to it. This is the marketing department of an actual publisher. Because this book is in pre-order, and it's been in the number one and number two spots for over 2 months now. And they said to me that it was mostly because of they don't have any other social media, so it's all my social media. So there must be something to it to post 3 times a week. And if you don't have a Facebook page, Anita, you may want to get a book Facebook,
oh.
You know, an author Facebook page up. Because
well,
I,
that's what got me. Yeah, that's what got me into trouble to begin with, is because I didn't set up Facebook right to begin with, and I never could get it right, and there were just so many issues. I just finally just discontinued the whole thing.
Well, call Brittany, and she'll help you out. But you should think about it, because I'm telling you, I see a lot of traction in sales since we're putting up these posts. And, you know, we've had quite a few shares of the videos. And they're not great. They're not rehearsed. I mispronounce things. I don't even look good. I'm not happy with my hair. I'm not happy with, you know, the way I look. But it doesn't matter. It's, I'm reading pieces of the book to people, and it must be good enough because the book is selling and it's maintained. That number, and that's never happened to us. It's never happened to me with any of our books that I published a book and it stayed in the number one spot for this length of time. So there must be something to it. That those Facebook posts help. And I think hearing the author's own voice really has helped promote the book.
Well, that's something that I could very easily do, because, you know, I'm doing the podcast, which has been another learning experience. And I actually invested in a good quality microphone, or at least according to all of the reviews, it was always sitting at the top of the microphone list, which is a Blue Yeti. And that's what I use now to record all my podcasts. And I think the quality of sound coming off the microphone is a lot better than what it is coming out of the cell phone. But that would be something very easy for me to do, to record those things. And you download Audacity, which is the software program to do the recording. You can do your own editing with it. And then just, I think you can upload an MP3. I'm pretty sure you can on Twitter. Now, I don't know about Facebook. I'm assuming that, that's what you're uploading is an MP3 file.
I have no idea. Brittany does it, and she puts music in. She's made them really pretty. She puts pictures with Michael. She's had, you know, video going. And, you know, that's something that I wanted to talk about. Like, well, you know, for each one of the books that we've made, the first time when I wrote Captain No Beard, I had a huge snafu with CreateSpace. And in order to make it up to me, they offered me a book trailer. And so they gave me this gorgeous book trailer. And, you know, the book is still popular and the book trailer is beautiful. Subsequently, I did one other with them, but they were very expensive. And then a whole bunch of people popped up that were much more reasonable. RL's made a bunch of book trailers for me, and my son makes the book trailers. And, you know, so it's, you're marrying your book with these visuals. You know, Brittany's done a bunch of book trailers for Monsterland. And they put in edgy music, and it's really, I think, appealing when people see the book trailer. And, you know, you're using more than just buy my book. I think it's an enticement. Just like when you go to the movies and you have to sit through an hour of those movie trailers, you come out saying, oh, I want to go back and see blah, blah, blah. That's what's happening when you put up these book trailers. And they're well made, like RL made me some gorgeous book trailers, I think it induces people, the visual part, makes them want to buy the book. Or, you know, even if they're on the fence about it, seeing what your interpretation is in this book trailer makes it really appealing. What do you think?
Well, I've got a book trailer for each one of mine, and I found that it does help. You know, when I do a post, I'm putting up the book trailer, and all they have to do is click on it, you know, and start listening to it. So I have to agree. I think that, you know, the visual and the sound really does help on the promotion.
RL,
I like book trailers.
RL, that's your specialty because you make films. So what do you feel about it?
Well, I mean, as far as what you've been doing on your social media is, like, really engaging and something that I've been thinking about doing as well, but I didn't know that your son had did it without, you know, filming himself, because I'm not, you know, that person that likes to be in front of the camera. I'm the behind the camera person. So I've been toying with the idea of doing my takeovers, you know, with snippets of my book. I'm going to redo both my book trailers as a series trailer, and I'm going to be the one speaking the narration instead of having the words on the trailer like they used to.
Right.
I'm trying to find different ways to help myself and other authors when it comes to promoting their book and making some money, because not everyone's going to be able to get a TV show, or, you know, the traditional way anyway, or a traditional movie deal, not without a whole lot of work or some huge book deal, and then you have to be basically everywhere. So,
well, you know, that's the that's like the top of the mountain. That's the Mount Everest, I think, right, Anita? Right, RL?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're all,
Lord, yes.
Everybody wants.
Yeah.
I mean, I did children's books, but, I mean, that would be the pinnacle of success to have somebody call me and say, oh, we're going to turn Captain Nobeard into a, you know, Saturday morning cartoon on Nickelodeon or whatever. I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
what you know, when I got contacted by a producer at Disney for Can a Princess Be a Firefighter, I mean, like, I didn't touch down for a month. I mean, nothing ended up happening, but it was a really thrilling month. And that in itself is near impossible. Like, I don't think people realize how hard, you know, everybody hears about The Martian or 50 Shades of Grey, you know, or The Mockingbird, or, you know, even Harry Potter, which was traditionally published. But everybody hears about these grassroots kind of things, and they think that it's, but it's not. You go into production hell, even if your book gets looked at. Somebody could hold it for 10 years and nothing can happen. They can't get a script. They can't get it. You know, a book gets picked up. You need a film agent. You know, it gets picked up by a production company. They have to still shop it around to a studio to get financing. They have, you know, then, you know, whatever, studios change hands. The production company goes out. Your book could get stuck there. So actually, for your book to be made into a movie, which is like really where the money is, right? It's impossible. But there's some new ways coming out to do that. RL, you want to talk about it?
Well, yeah, there's some new ways. There's one way that I'm thinking of trying to do something with my books and getting them out there on film. I have my own production company. And I did, you know, I had given my book to a different production company, and they were interested in looking at it and making it into something, but haven't heard back from them yet, if ever. So, you know, I have the ability to do this stuff because I do it almost every day anyway. But my thing is I wanted to ask my readers, hey, if, you know, if you finished reading my book and you enjoyed it, would you pay $5 or $10 or $4 or $5 to watch, say, the first episode of that series, or, you know, 5 episodes of that first book? And it's been a resounding yes from a lot of these readers. They said that they not only would, you know, watch, but they would want to only watch if the author was, I guess, intimately involved in the process, because a lot of these adaptations, as we know, they get changed once you give it to a studio. So, yeah, you can have some creative control with your IP, intellectual property, but once you give someone or sell someone the rights, they can do whatever they want. And a lot of readers get upset because they watch The Mockingjay and, you know, oh, but they didn't show this person. They didn't do that thing. So you have to worry about that kind of stuff. But my idea is to find a book that, you know, people like enough to want to watch, and see if I can't start that process with, you know, an indie author, and, you know, they get to retain their rights and put at the back of their book, hey, if you enjoyed this, click here, where they can go ahead and watch the actual episode or maybe the movie. But I'm thinking more episodes, because that would be easier to do in smaller bit. Some of the response has also been, if the first episode were free, you know, I guess as a loss, kind of like how books work, as a loss leader, you know, they watch that first episode, and if it's done well and they want to watch the rest of the series, they would be willing to pay to do that as well. So it's just something I'm working on for 2019, and we'll see how that goes. But it's just in the infancy right now. So nothing is really set in stone, but it's something I really am passionate about, and I would love to see some of these books that, you know, I've been reading and or people I've been interviewing turned into a movie. And if I can help do that, I'm all about that all day.
You know, I think it's like, you know, that's, I think our the pinnacle of what we all want. Do you agree with that, Anita? Is that what you want?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. But I'll tell you what, I think it's a harder nut to crack than, you know, if you're an author trying to get a literary agent to pick up your book.
Mm-hmm.
It is. You know, I can't disagree with any of what either one of you have said about the difficulties that are there. It's very much a, I'll tell you what, I sent off, I don't even remember now who it was I sent it to. It was some big production company that I found out in California, and I put in my press releases, and I did all of that, and I had it all nicely wrapped with bubble wrap around one of my hardbacks, and I shipped it off, and about 2 weeks later, here it comes back. They hadn't even unwrapped it.
They had put a very nice letter. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had put a very nice letter that, you know, they appreciated the submission, but due to copyright issues, they did not look at anything, which is why they were returning the whole thing to me. So that was very much of a learning curve, yeah, that you just can't send your book off to these things or even part of it like what you can a literary agent and have them take a look at it and say, okay, yeah, I'm interested. It just doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't. You can't send unsolicited work. Go ahead, RL.
No, I had an author contact me yesterday. Matter of fact, I don't know how he found out about my idea or if he just looked at my profile and saw that I was a director, a filmmaker, but, you know, he asked, are you accepting manuscripts unsolicited? And I, you know, had to think about that for a while because there are copyright issues. And I told him, not at this time, because once you get started, you have to have NDAs in place, non-disclosures.
Right.
You have to make sure that you are covered, because if you accept something, and even if you didn't read it or you never get back to that person and something even remotely similar comes out of your production company that they sent you, you're on the hook and you could be potentially sued. So you have to be real careful about just sending your stuff out there. And there's some people that won't do what they did with you, Anita. They'll open it up and they'll steal your idea, and then you'll still be kind of screwed because you did that without making them sign something to the effect that they wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
So,
that's like a lot with this process. So sometimes it's trial and error, and it's what I refer to as publishing landmines. I hit a big one there. So
Everybody kind of thinks they're just going to write this book and, you know, they're going to put it in the hands of, you know, some movie producer and it's just going to get made. And it's just not that simple. You know, Michael's had, like, a lot of interest, but he had it. They didn't want it as an indie. He had to close the book. He had to close his book Monsterland down as an indie and then republish it with a small publisher as, you know, as a traditionally published book under his real name, and they don't want pen names either. So it was very interesting.
What was the rationale behind that, that they wouldn't take it as an indie?
The rationale that they don't want it as an indie is because I guess they want to know that they have a traditional publisher that's going to promote the book along with it. It's going to look more legitimate, maybe. I don't know. But I didn't understand why we had to change his name. He had close to 25,000 followers on Facebook under his Michael Philip Cash name. You know, the book had close to 300 reviews, which, you know, now how hard it is to get a review. This was, I had, you know, amassed those reviews when it was easier to get them. And because, like, right now they're scarcer than hen's teeth. You can't even get a new review. I don't know when the last time we got any new reviews. So I don't know if people just gave up reviewing or they just don't publish them on Amazon anymore. But but they wanted his real name. They said Hollywood does not like to deal with pen names. They want the real name. So he had to publish under his real name. And, you know, the book was, to make it a little different, they re-edited it. They cleaned it up. They put on a new cover, which, of course, my younger son designed. And that was it. And then they published Monsterland 2, which had never been published under Michael's pen name. But Monsterland 1 still sold better than Monsterland 2, even though I think Monsterland 2 is a better book. So, I don't know. I'm learning every day with this stuff. Just when you think you've got it nailed, they go and they change the rules on you.
Nope. It's a work in progress.
It is.
Continue.
All right, guys. Until next week.
All right.
That was fun.
Bye-bye.